Have you been to the website deadmalls.com? It chronicles those huge spaces that people once flocked to that are now ghost towns, like Cleveland's Randall Park Mall. When it opened in 1976, it was billed as the world's largest shopping center. Now it will be razed to make way for an industrial park. Crews started demolishing it in late December. According to the mall tracking group Green Street Advisors, more than two dozen shopping malls have closed since 2010. 60 more are on the brink. So what are malls doing to survive? Robin Lewis is co-author of The New Rules of Retail, Competing in the World's Toughest Marketplace. He's also CEO of The Robin Report. I wish I'd thought of that title. It's a retail strategy newsletter. Robin, welcome.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, we've heard a lot of reasons for why malls are on the decline. One of them is inequity, because the high-end malls seem to be thriving, but it's the lower end that are not. Why not, in your mind?
Well, first of all, the higher-end malls are attracting the luxury-level customers, and typically they originated with all kinds of special events and things that go on. They've got designer shops. So they're really catering to a minute segment of consumers. Mm-hmm. And that even though luxury is expected to decline next year, they still have a good deal of money. Mm-hmm. So the high-end malls will make it. The other malls, they're suffering from two huge cultural shifts. One, the boomers are retiring, downsizing, what money they do have. They're spending more on travel, leisure, entertainment, health, and wellness. So they aren't hanging out and shopping in the malls. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, the young millennial generation is really going to transform the retail industry in total, and the malls particularly, because of two things. One, they have every store and mall in the world sitting comfortably in their pocket.
Through the internet, yeah.
That's correct, the mobile devices. And secondly, because of all these mobile devices and the internet, they have found many other experiences that attract them more than just hanging out at the mall, which they used to do.
That's so interesting, because we're reading some analysis that actually online shopping is less than 10% of retail sales. Less than 10% take place online. But you're saying it's not just the shopping, it's the doing. They're doing other things online.
They're doing other things, yeah. So retailers and malls aren't competing just against other retailers. They're competing against time and money that these young people are spending on other stuff.
So let's look at what some malls are doing to survive. You mentioned, for instance, the Fiesta Mall in Atlanta, an example of malls catering to a specific demographic group.
Right. The Fiesta Mall in Atlanta was repurposed a few years ago to specifically target the Hispanic community, which, as you know, is growing rapidly in terms of percent of the population. So they turned the Plaza Fiesta in Atlanta into a fun all-day shopping trip for the Hispanic families, because culturally, that is the way they like to shop, as the whole family. So not only have they invited different apparel people in there that sell apparel that attracts that group, they also have live Hispanic music, they have Mexican food restaurants, and on and on.
So that's one approach, sort of target a demographic. You also mentioned the South Coast Plaza Mall in Costa Mesa, California. What are they doing?
Well, that is an upscale mall. That's one of the ones that you talk about. But they have added a lot of stuff there to make it kind of a go-to family vacation and destinations. They are listed on familyvacationsgetaways.com. You know, they've got an A-plus list of designer stores, a terrific list of restaurants. It's got a movie theater, merry-go-round for kids. They have themed artistic displays rotating throughout holiday seasons, or even country themes like a cherry blossom display for Japan. Their sales are like $1.5 billion a year, the highest in the U.S. So they're kind of like the poster child for malls who really want to transform themselves
and stay in business. But increasingly that's hard because, again, other analysts are saying things like, we're over-retailed. It feels way. Yeah, it feels when you drive around, I don't want to see another, I won't mention the name, but shoe store. I don't want to see. Yeah, and so there's just too many stores, and that's why some of these malls are closing as stores, but reopening is what? Give us some of the examples of how the space is being reused.
Well, first of all, Robin, let me put this in context. There are 46 square feet of retail space for every man, woman, and child in this country. The next runner-up is Europe with about 3.5. So that gives you a little indication of how overstored and overstuffed we are.
Well, and you've told us some of the malls that are repurposing. There's the Galleria at Erie View in Cleveland. They became a greenhouse. The Tri-County Mall in Oliver Springs, Tennessee became the Beach Park Baptist Church. And then there's the Villa Italia Mall in Lakewood, Colorado.
Well, what they did is they have reinvented that. And they now have like 22 blocks of kind of walkable urban streets. It's like a street of boutiques.
Huh.
Where you kind of hunt and peck for things, and it's a lot of fun. And, you know, there's another great example of an urban mall, in fact, the oldest one in the United States, which is in Providence, Rhode Island, Arcade Mall. It was founded in 1828, and it became a landmark. But then it was reinvented recently and reopened in 2013, and it is a residential and commercial mixed-use mall with specialty boutiques, micro-apartments for the young, hip singles. And it's really quite spectacular.
So reinventing themselves. When I was in Mountain View, California recently, I saw the old Mayfield Mall, which is now Google Glass.
Right.
Do you think this will work, or will there be another sea change? Some remember the sea change when malls were built. Will there be another sea change where malls will be a thing that people tell their kids used to exist?
The transformation is going to be two ways. First of all, we'll lose probably 30% of the existing malls out there, maybe even more. They'll just go away, or they'll be reconverted into gardens, greenhouses.
Medical centers?
medical centers, whatever. But the other model that they will evolve to are these kind of open-air, what I call multipurpose lifestyle villages. And one great example of that is Easton Town Center in Columbus, Ohio. They've got more than 200 stores, restaurants, entertainment, events. They even have an IMAX theater. Mm-hmm. They have apartments in there, offices, and those are becoming more popular. And most of the developers, mall developers, are moving more in that direction.
Wow.
So they're closer into the urban areas, accessible, so you don't have to hop in your car and go 20 minutes. But they're like shopping in little villages. It's a whole different experience. And again, that's catering to the young millennials who are all, by the way, moving into urban areas as opposed to buying homes in the suburbs.
Huh. That's Robin Lewis, co-author of The New Rules of Retail, Competing in the World's Toughest Marketplace with a Look at Malls, Now and in the Future. Robin, thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Robin.
And let's take a minute for a weather update. It's snowing a lot in parts of the country. There. Actually, there's more. It's snowing in New England, but the Midwest is digging out. Michigan got a foot and a half of snow Sunday into Monday. Detroit got the most snow that city has seen in four decades. Plow trucks there have been working 12 and 16-hour shifts since Sunday morning. In nearby Macomb County, Michigan, the Meals on Wheels program had to cancel its deliveries. Meanwhile, the Chicago Tribune reports that what everyone's calling the Super Bowl blizzard is officially the fifth biggest storm in Chicago's history. O'Hare Airport soared just over 19 inches. More than 5,000 flights across the country have been canceled, making it harder for Super Bowl fans and the Patriots to get out of Arizona. In the Northeast, where they're headed, Boston, Connecticut, New York, Philadelphia, all dealing with some kind of winter mix today. And by the way, today on his day, the groundhog Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow, which of course means another six more weeks of winter. He's been making forecasts since the 1800s, not the same groundhog, of course, predicting a longer winter 102 times, forecasting an early spring just 17 times. He is no fool.